As we all know, there are some massive issues facing our health system, and someone who's right in the thick of it. Very lucky to have him on the line from Perth. His name is Dr. Omar Khorshid. He is the National President of the Australian Medical Association. There are a couple of big topics that I'm very keen to speak with Dr. Khorshid about. Omar, welcome to the King Review, first of all.
Hi, g'day, Gavin. Very pleased to be with you.
All right. As I said, a couple of big topics that the AMA has launched in the last couple of weeks. One of them is about a report card on our public hospitals. We'll get to that in a moment. I was very keen to speak to you about a discussion paper you released in the last couple of weeks called The Future of Dispensing. Now, this is all about how do we get more affordable and accessible medicines long into the future for all Australians, including those of us in regional Australia? I think it's a very, very important discussion to have. Omar, first of all, let's give listeners a quick rundown about some of these really, what I find, insane restrictive protections that pharmacies enjoy. Can you just give listeners a quick rundown? What are those rules and regulations on the pharmacy sector?
Well, it's pretty complex and it does vary around the country, but at the core of it is the fact that basically to own a pharmacy, you need to be a pharmacist. Some states have limits on the number of pharmacies you can own, some don't. And you can't just open up a new pharmacy in competition with an existing one down the road, because there's rules and regulations about the separation of pharmacies. And what it does is protects the current owners of pharmacists and blocks any new entrants, any new pharmacists wanting to start their own practice or any other business that might want to compete from getting into that space. So you can't have a pharmacy in the Coles or the Woolies. You can't even have a private pharmacy run by a hospital within a private hospital in states like Western Australia. And what it's doing is just, it's so anti-competitive that it's driving up the prices of medicines for Australians. Remembering that Australians are paying at the moment almost $11 billion in out-of-pocket costs for pharmaceuticals. That's the biggest out-of-pocket cost out of all of our health system.
It's an extraordinary level of protection. I mean, I don't know any other sector of our economy or our health sector that enjoys such protections. I mean, talk about anti-competitive. I mean, GPs don't enjoy those type of protections, for example.
No, our economy has moved in exactly the opposite direction, and all the protected industries have gradually been opened up to competition. And of course, consumers have benefited with lower prices and offer better products on offer as competition drives change in industries. And certainly in the area of health, there are no restrictions on who can own medical practices. So, you know, a pharmacist could own a GP practice, for instance. But the other way around is not possible. And that's one of the things that's been pointed out again and again by reviews, by the Productivity Commission or competition reviews. For the last 20 years, pretty much every review has said that the protections of the community pharmacy sector are actually not in the interests of Australians when it comes to both affordability of medicines, but also convenience of accessing medicines.
No, because it's in the interests of a select group of pharmacists who are lucky enough to own a pharmacy, to put it bluntly. Because if you're a 25 or a 30-year-old pharmacist, unless you're in the right place at the right time, it's virtually impossible for you to own a pharmacy, as you said, because of the protections around those who currently own pharmacies. And location, to me, is one of the big ones. These rules around certain distance between pharmacies. So the convenience of having a pharmacy, for example, inside a GP clinic or inside a Woolworths or a Coles, for example. Talk to us, Dr. Khorshid, about some of the issues that you raise, some of the ideas and the concepts that the AMA has raised in this recent discussion paper about how we can break up that anti-competitive nature of the pharmacy sector, but also, again, provide true benefits for everyday Australians.
So to start with, I think it's worth saying that the AMA is very supportive of the role of pharmacists within our health sector, and we are very supportive of the separation of prescription from dispensing.
That's a very good point to make. Let's just unpack that for listeners a little bit, that separation, as you said.
Yeah, so a doctor at the moment, generally speaking, a doctor prescribes a medication but doesn't provide it to you, and certainly isn't generally allowed to sell it to you. They can give you small amounts as a sample, for instance, if that's necessary. But generally speaking, you go to your pharmacist, and the pharmacist is another professional, another mind, who can actually step back and have a look at your other medications. And it just adds to the safety, just in case the GP or the doctor has made an error or hasn't taken something into account. You've got another set of eyes going over it. And of course, you've got a trained pharmacist actually making sure that the correct medicine is dispensed and that the correct instructions are printed on the packet, all of which are absolutely critical to the safety of the dispensing.
And again, the AMA, again, isn't talking about changing, disrupting, altering that aspect of dispensing medicines.
No, we think the role of pharmacists is critical. But what we're saying is, let's think of other ways that we could maintain the safety of our dispensing, but actually enhance the affordability and enhance the convenience. So some examples that we've pointed out in our paper are things like having pharmacists employed within GP practices, which there's a program at the moment that's doing that, aimed mainly at medication reviews and things. But there's no reason why a pharmacist working in a GP practice couldn't dispense some medications or do it even from a vending machine. So you could have a machine that was electronically linked to a practice management system. It would automatically dispense the appropriate medications. You've still got a pharmacist there to make sure that that medication is understood by the patient and that you've got that safety there. But it's just convenient for those who choose to have their medication dispensed by a GP or in a GP practice that they could do that. Other options include online prescription. And there's a lot of people who don't really need specific advice on their medicine because they've been having the same tablet for the last 15 years and they go to their GP regularly. There's no reason why you couldn't access that online cheaper, for instance. And there's all sorts of other models in between just around enhancing affordability. And that's where I guess the other main area and the one where we see they're most likely to be changed if things were opened up is that you would likely see supermarkets getting involved. We've seen that overseas. And it's not that you have drugs sitting on the shelf in the supermarket. You've actually got a pharmacy within the supermarket with a pharmacist. And but they're able to use their buying power, their massive size, to really make sure that prices are as low as they can be. And I think in particular, the area that might be most useful would be in regional Australia, where some of the economies of scale are a problem. But when you're a big supermarket chain, obviously that's not an issue for you.
Again, I just think it's a debate worth having, but it does seem to get shot down. Now, the Pharmacy Guild of Australia negotiates these five-year agreements with the government worth billions and billions of dollars every 5 years. But Dr. Korshid, this debate seems to get shot down before it even starts, despite all of the reviews, despite all of the recommendations, despite the AMA's repeated calls to look at this issue. I mean, how do we get past this kind of, and the Pharmacy Guild has engaged again in it in the last couple of weeks in response to the AMA's paper. It becomes this kind of tit for tat and almost a bloody schoolyard pot shots at the AMA when you raise this from the Pharmacy Guild. I mean, how do we get beyond that and let's actually have a proper debate? How do governments have, you know, the mettle to take this issue on seriously?
Well, I think it was John Howard who said, don't mess with the pharmacist or the newspaper or the news agents. You know, they're pretty powerful and they're connected to the people. And,
that's right.
You know, I guess it takes the people to actually point out to their local members that actually, you know, this last vestige in a way of protectionism is not actually helpful. You know, opening pharmacies up to competition will not be the death of the community pharmacy. Absolutely not. But it will open things up to competition, to better products being put forward in a way that suits consumers. To actually inject competition into any market generally improves that market's performance. We know that through all sorts of other aspects of the economy, and the same would be true in pharmacy. But as you say, the Guild is a very powerful political force. It directly donates significant amounts of money to all the political parties. And that's something that the AMA doesn't do. And we've always tried to, I guess, keep the high moral ground and not be seeking influence in that way. But we need to use our connection with the community, perhaps our network of doctors who are just as connected to the community as pharmacists are, or perhaps more so, to actually push government to take this issue on before the next community pharmacy agreement and ensure that the next agreement is actually negotiated in a way that, that benefits Australians rather than this very small number of people who are lucky enough to own community pharmacies.
Very good stuff. Very keen to follow that debate on this program as well. So fantastic that the AMA continues to raise it. I'm speaking here with Dr. Omar Khorshid, the president of the Australian Medical Association. The other big topic I wanted to cover with you in the short time that we have left is the AMA has just released its annual public hospital report card. Very, very, of course, critical time for this type of analysis of our public health system, given the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Khorshid, tell us, I guess if you can, break down how does Queensland, for example, compare to some of the other states in this latest AMA report card?
Thanks, Gavin. So what's important to know about this report card is it looks at data from 2020. So that's a period when much of Australia was actually locked down and people weren't allowed to go out and about. They weren't allowed to play sport. They weren't allowed to do things. And the demand on hospitals dropped substantially. We had, for the first time, hospitals with lots of empty beds. We were all getting ready for this onslaught of COVID that never actually happened because our borders were so effective, our border closures were so effective. So it was the best possible circumstance. And despite that, the performance in every state and territory was either a bit worse or a bit better. In the case of Queensland, it did improve in terms of emergency access. So a couple of things we look at are the proportion of people that come in with a Category 2 emergency, which is quite a high-level emergency, were treated on time. And that was that improved slightly in Queensland from in the 60s up to 71%. Similarly, the proportion of people who presented to emergency department who were cared for and either sent up to the ward or sent home within 4 hours also had a marginal improvement from 69 or 70% up by 1% or so. So pretty small improvements despite the best possible circumstances with this period of almost no presentations. And what that says to us is how would hospitals cope when the opposite happens, when you get the surge in admissions from a COVID outbreak, what would happen? And it's a pretty scary thought. And that's why we're talking about this now. It's why we're been pushing for a long time for hospitals to develop the capacity to have some surge, some space, some surge capacity, but also why vaccination rates in Queensland are so critical. Because if you don't have your vaccination rate high enough, as soon as COVID comes in, it's going to have a devastating impact on public hospitals.
How concerned are you, Dr. Khorshid, about vaccination rates on Indigenous communities? And as you say, when, if that surge of COVID, the Delta variant, does happen, particularly in parts of the country like ours, where this low vaccination rate on Indigenous communities, currently at about half fully vaccinated as the rest of the community, the pressure on our hospitals, should that happen? I mean, our, as an example, Cairns Hospital in recent weeks has been at code yellow on numerous occasions. And as the paper points out, as you pointed out, that's with zero COVID cases in the hospital. I mean, how concerned are you about that fact?
Look, really concerned, Gavin, particularly around those low rates of vaccination in Indigenous communities. It's something we're seeing across the country. And we've already seen in that Delta outbreak in Sydney, the impact in one community of low vaccination rates when COVID gets in. And because Indigenous Australians are living with so many more chronic diseases and in circumstances where they haven't got easy access to a big fancy hospital with ICU beds and a huge team of trained staff, you've got a perfect storm really of high risk and of a lack of access to healthcare that you know could have a devastating impact, not just on the hospitals, but on the lives of Australians, Indigenous Australians in particular, as they get extremely sick and likely die from this completely preventable disease. And that's the key here. The vaccination can completely prevent hospitalisation death, or almost completely, to a level that we really weren't expecting. And what we've seen in New South Wales is the vaccines have been more effective than everybody thought at reducing the size of the outbreak, at keeping people out of hospital. They're better than we thought they would be. And with the booster program now available as well, if we get this right, we can avoid COVID ruining our lives and ruining our communities. And that's really the message, I guess, for Indigenous communities and everybody in rural Queensland. Just go and get yourself vaccinated.
Absolutely right. Go and do it. The access now that we have, well, across the country now, access to these vaccines, there are pop-up clinics. There's so much access now. it's absolutely vital that people go and get that vaccine, absolutely. You also found in this report card, of course, that elective surgery is just as bad results there as emergency department. But I just wanted to, I guess, go now to what would you like to see happen to attempt to fix some of this? Is it just about more funding for our hospitals, or are there other measures that we should be taking?
Look, it's always both. I mean, any conversation around health is about funding. And one thing I think the governments have not adequately prepared for is the increase in demand as our population ages and as people are living longer lives with more chronic diseases. People are not dying of the conditions they used to die of because we've got better medical treatments. They're living longer, and they're living longer with chronic diseases, which means they need to access ongoing health care. So I think that there's been a failure to really predict that demand and deal with it. And we're calling that out now and saying there does need to be not just more funding, but funding in a way that drives capacity growth so that state governments are ready and willing to invest in new hospitals, new doctors, new nurses to run those new beds. Mm. But also looking at the demand side, what can we do around prevention, which most governments are putting nowhere near the amount of money into prevention that they should be? Mm. What can we do around primary care and aged care, general practice and aged care facilities to stop people needing to come to hospital in the first place? Because we know that care is so much cheaper, so much better for the life of Australians than ending up in hospital. So we've got a series of things that we'd like to see our national government doing. But of course, it comes down to the state governments too, who actually run these hospitals, to make sure that they are doing everything they can to develop that capacity to deal with the healthcare needs of the future.
I'm sure you'll share the frustration that I do in this regard, because we've known for a long time about our ageing population. We've known for a long time that prevention is better than cure, and yet here we are still trying to raise it as an issue. It's just staggering to me.
It is staggering. It's very frustrating, I think, for anyone who works in the public health sector, whether it be in the prevention area or in the acute end, in the front door of an ED or in an ICU. But so we can do so much better. We know what we need to do. It's just developing that will to actually do it. And that's why we are out and about. That's why the AMA is having so much to say in this area at the moment, and will continue to do so as we go into an election environment in the coming months. Mm. Because at the end of the day, what COVID has shown us is that Australians do value their health. Mm. They want to have a healthcare system that will respond when they need it. And it's up to our politicians to deliver that. Mm.
And the frontline workers, of course, do an absolutely remarkable job, so they need to be supported by government, absolutely. Dr. Omar Khorshid, a lot to unpack there. I really appreciate your time. He is the president of the Australian Medical Association. Dr. Khorshid, thank you for your time on the King Review today.
Cheers, Gavin.